This is the Motion Church Podcast. Thanks for joining us. If you'd like more information about Motion Church, you can always visit our website at motionchurch.com. If you'd like to contribute to what God is doing here at Motion, you can do that at motionchurch.com/give. We hope you enjoyed today's message.
All right. What's up, everybody? Hey, that's good. How many of you guys would say that your natural disposition is like, maybe you're not super positive all the time, but maybe you're not super negative. Like, you're somewhere in the middle. Like, you're a realist. You're pretty realistic. I would categorize myself as a very realistic person. So I was driving home last night. It was about 8:30, 8:45. And there was quote unquote snow. And I'm like, dear God, nobody's going to come to church tomorrow. I saw somebody from the church sent me a meme, and it was like, it takes 800 gallons of water to baptize somebody, as a Christian, and it takes 8 drops of rain to keep them from coming to church. Golly. So that was my realism, and so at any rate, here we are. So glad you guys are like the Navy SEALs of church folk. You're here. You're brave. The few, the Marines, the few, the proud. Right. So we're continuing our series this week called Game On. And so kind of the idea here in the series is using retro video games because, what better backdrop than retro video games? It's a muse. It's an inspiration for some of the things that we've been looking at. So what we've been looking at are some goals that we should have individually and some goals that we should have collectively as a church for this year. And what I think we do, and I've probably beat this, to a pulp here, is that I think that we overestimate the value of New Year's resolutions. Everybody's like, it's July, and they're like, yeah, in January, that'll be my New Year's resolution, and then they get to January, and 3 days later, it's over, because we overestimate the power of New Year's resolutions. But I think we underestimate the power of constantly evaluated goals, right? Goals that are always in front of us, that are always things that we're thinking about and striving towards and tweaking if necessary. And I think goals are really, really incredible. They're powerful and they're important. So we're looking at some goals in this series in kind of the game on. And the first one, we started with how growth is the goal. Growth is the goal. It's evident in everything that's around us. You look at nature. I love the way in the book of Romans, it talks about how God is seen, God is evident in everything that's around us. You look at nature and you see the characteristics of God. And so in nature, we see growth all of the time. You plant a seed, the seed then grows, whatever the seed is. It grows and grows and grows until it comes, to full maturity, and you see the blooming, you see the flowers if it's a plant, right? You see all of the growth all around you. And so growth for us is the goal. As followers of Jesus, growth is the goal. Like, we don't want to be the same person in 5 years that we are today. And I suspect you're probably not the same person today that you were 2, 3, 4, 5 years ago. Hopefully you've grown, you've learned, you've matured. You don't do some of the dumb things that you used to do, right? Hopefully, still some of them. It happens. It happens. So that's where we started. Growth is the goal. And then last week we started in our acrostic because I love acrostics. And Shelley was like, stop apologizing for acrostics. And I was like, I didn't mean it. I wasn't really apologizing. I was just letting you know that, hey, we're doing acrostic, sorry, not sorry, right? Kind of more like that. So we started with the G, and the goal for us individually and kind of as a church is generosity. Shelley mentioned that it's one of our core values as a church. But more than that, like, you look through all of Scripture and generosity, not just because we naturally equate generosity to money. That's not what it is. Generosity is not an action. It's an attitude. Right? So it's so much more than just money. Generosity is what you do with your time, how you invest your time in other people, how you serve other people with what you have. And I told a story about, I fixed a computer for somebody that didn't take them very long, but it didn't take me very long, probably would have taken them a really long time or cost them more money to go get a technician to fix it or whatever the case was. And I forgot to mention, the day before, so this was last Sunday, the day before, I have a trailer. How many of you guys like man stuff? I got a trailer. How many of you can actually back up a trailer? Okay. How many of you have jackknifed a trailer? It happens. So I have a trailer, and the axle on the trailer was trashed. So my stepdad, who is the most mechanical person on the face of the planet, helps me. We spend all day Saturday fixing my trailer. And so I was just thinking about, that was a great example. He invested his time. He was generous with his time to help me do what I needed to get done so that I could then go do the things that I need to do, right? And it's just an incredible example to me of generosity. So generosity is one of the goals. This week, we're going to get to the A in our acrostic. And I have to be careful because the older I get, the less I care what people think. Okay, which is probably, I mean, I'm sure there's good in that, but there's also like, okay, bro, you're going a little, you know, too far. So I was like, let's push the envelope, but let's also be appropriate, right? So I was thinking about like, you know, get off your ask or something like that would be the title. But I was like, that's inappropriate. I can't say that in church. But I just said it in church. It's weird. So that's not actually what we're talking about. The title of today's message is, we're talking, the A is actually ask. It's to ask. One of our goals should be to ask. And the title for today is to ask better questions. Ask better questions. Ask better questions. I'm preaching to my kids. Ask better questions. Stop asking questions that I just answered. Ask, for the love of God, better questions. Anybody else? Like, I love, y'all know I love my children, I love my kids, but dear heaven, like, they ask things that I just answered, and usually not for the first time. Like, it's the third time I've answered the same question, and then they ask the question again. Ask better questions. So here's our first point for today in the message, ask better questions. And we're going to steal this from Clint Eastwood. Some of y'all don't even know who Clint Eastwood is. Like, and so he was old when I first found out about Clint Eastwood, and I'm kind of old, so now he's like old, right? So there was a movie in probably the late 70s, early 80s, Dirty Harry. And so he, there's a scene where he captures a bad guy, and he's got his big revolver, and he's like, you have to ask yourself one question. Do you feel lucky? Well, do you? Punk. Was the impersonation okay? It's decent. I've been practicing, not having it all actually. So the point was, the setup was, he's like, you've got to ask yourself one question, and then consequently, he was probably fixing to shoot him with his large gun. The stakes may not be as high, but maybe they are, right? I think if we don't ask the right questions, I think the ramifications or the rewards of asking the right questions or asking the wrong questions are kind of life or death. Right, it's kind of significant, the questions that we ask ourselves. So our goal here, as it relates to goals, is to ask ourselves questions, better questions than the one. Y'all know what happened? This is what happens. Anytime something adverse happens in our life, our first question is, why, God? Right? And we're kind of whiny about it. Why, W-H-Y. Yeah, whiny about it. And we're like, why, God? And I heard somebody say a long time ago, and it really changed my perspective, because we've all done it, right? We're visceral. Like, you feel the weight of the moment and the emotion of the moment. And you're just like, oh, my God. And I'm sure God's like, shut up. Like, I love you, but stop, right? Probably the same way we feel about our kids. Like, stop. Why are you asking the same questions? And I think the shift that was so kind of paramount for me was to stop asking God why, but start asking God what? Like, what is it? I see that there's some struggle. I see that there's some adversity. I see some challenges in my life. And instead of asking you why and being whiny, maybe I should start asking, what is it that I need to learn? What is it that I need to figure out through this process? What is it that I need to change in my own life? Like, start asking God what, so that we can be action-oriented and stop being paralyzed by our whininess. So here's the question. Ask yourself one question. This is the question. If you're in any kind of situation where you don't know what to do, which is pretty much every day for most of us, right? Like, just a situation pops up where you're not sure what the right answer is. Here's the question to ask. What would a great blank do? What would a great blank do? Incredible response. And a hush fell over the crowd. I thought, you know, it'd be like, yeah, you know, that's pretty good, Pastor. That's pretty good. But there wasn't any of that. So here's what's so good about this, what's so powerful about this, is that it's very fluid, right? It's fluid in that it applies to all of our circumstances, because you can ask that question in any circumstance that you face. But it's also good in that it's fluid, and it rhymes, so it's got to be true. It's also good that it's fluid in that you can kind of determine the outcome based on the input. right? So when you fill in that blank, you are determining what the outcome of your situation is and how you're going to respond to what happens to you. Let me give you some examples. Have you ever had a season in your life where you're just not growing in your faith like you would like to, right? Maybe you're sincere, like you really do love Jesus, and you're kind of like going through some of the motions, but you just haven't seen the progress that you hoped that you would see up to this point. And so in a situation like that, you have really one of two options, in my opinion. You can get lost in the jungle of your own mind, which is where we go a lot of times, right? Like when things aren't happening like we think they should, man, we just get into this analysis paralysis situation where we just start questioning everything. And then usually you turn that inward and it's like, what's wrong with me? And you get down this just very deep, dark rabbit hole that I don't think that we're intended to get. However, if you're in that situation and you ask yourself, hey, what would a great Christian do in this situation? It changes everything. And great, that does not mean perfect, right? Like, we're clear on all of that. Maybe a more perfect word would be mature. What would somebody who is one step ahead of where I'm at currently, what would they do? What did they do to get one step ahead of where I am currently? What would they do? And here's what's so cool. Like, it kind of goes back to, I don't know how popular this was, you know, over the course of the last 10 years, but like 20 years ago, 25 years ago, there was this thing called, like, we had these bracelets that were circulating globally, and it was the WWJD thing. Y'all remember that? Shelly's like, yeah. And your status as a Christian was determined by, like, how cool your WWJD bracelet was. And I didn't wear one because I didn't want any conviction. Like, I wanted, that was not where I was at in my life at that point. So the WWJD thing was, you know, what would Jesus do? And the concept was you would wear a bracelet, and anytime you're faced with a situation, you'd be like, oh, what would Jesus do? And then ideally, it would keep you from making a really stupid decision, right? It was a guide in all of life situations and circumstances that would keep you from making poor choices. It's very similar to this idea. What would a great blank do in this situation? And Jesus is the greatest of all greats, right? The greatest of all blanks, right? The goat when it comes to blanks. So let's look at another example rather than doing the WWJD. This is how Paul said it. Paul said it like this. 1 Corinthians chapter 11, verse 1, it says this. And this has always been kind of one of those really interesting verses. It says, imitate me, just as I also imitate Christ. Imitate me, just as I also imitate Christ. The idea is, now that's a bold statement, right? That is somebody who is very confident in their relationship with God, their character, their development, their growth, that they could say to anyone else, hey, follow me. That's the way one translation actually kind of spells it out, is to follow me as I follow Jesus. So the idea is, hey, Paul is like, when you're in a situation and you're not sure what to do, maybe a great way to approach it would be, imitate me just as I also imitate Christ. Or what would a great blank do so that we can mimic them? That's actually kind of one of the ways that word imitate is translated, is to mimic, right? We're mimicking them. And here's what's so great about this. We don't even have to ask the question, what would they do? It's answered, it's spelled out for us. It's what did they do? This is how they live their life. This is how they approach the situations, the adversity that they face. You saw their character through all of their struggles, right? Because what the old expression, you don't find out what's inside of somebody until they get squeezed like a sponge, right? You see what comes out when the pressure is on, when the adversity is on, then you find out what somebody's actually made of. We saw what they were made of. We saw the way that they dealt with everything that they had to go through, and we saw the consistency through all of that. So follow Paul, follow Jesus, imitate me as I also imitate Christ. Makes sense? Here's another good thing about this, is that it is not in any way limited to, I guess, kind of what we would consider these spiritual implications. Although, I do believe that if you get the spiritual things right, everything else will line up like it's supposed to. I don't know that I can think of a single example in my life where somebody was where they needed to be spiritually, where everything else wasn't kind of in line, in lockstep with that. It's almost like Jesus knew what he was talking about, in Matthew chapter 6 when he said, hey, seek first the kingdom of heaven and I'll take care of everything else. All of these other things will be added unto you, right? Seek me first. Make me your highest priority and everything else will work itself out if you do these things first. So, but it's not limited to these spiritual questions. You can ask this question, what would a great blank do in any situation that you face? We talked about parenting earlier, for example. And you guys must be really good parents because y'all don't seem to struggle with the things that I seem to struggle with. Like, so when it comes to parenting, like, I feel like Shelly is a fantastic parent. I'm fair to middling, right? Decent. And so even in parenting, even if you feel like you're a pretty intelligent person, you're a pretty responsible person, there are still situations that you're faced with where you're just not exactly sure what the right thing to do is. So you kind of start running through scenarios in your head. It's like, could I get a jury of parents? No, I'm just kidding. I'm kidding. That was a joke. But you're just not sure. And here's what kind of compounds the issue here is that advice on how to parent is about as rare as a unicorn sighting. Like, when it comes to parenting, like, everybody's got all these ideas on how to parent. And I'm like, well, your child is a terrorist, so I'm not going to take advice from you on how to parent. So you could ask yourself, rather than kind of going through that exercise, what would a great parent do? Let's say you run a business. Let's say you're a boss. Let's say you're an employee. What would a great boss do? What would a great employee do? What would a great student do? What would a great son do? What would a great daughter do? What would a great husband do? What would a great wife do? Right? This is so far-reaching, wide-reaching, and it's, again, kind of, it's good that it's fluid. So ask better questions. Really, ask yourself this one question, right? Right. Okay. Good. Right. When it's like rhetorical like that, it's not fully rhetorical. So some feedback is absolutely okay. But in order, just like we talked about last week, kind of there's using Nintendo as, again, our concept here, our backdrop. In every video game, there's two things that it must have two things. One, the opportunity to level up, because if not, like, what are we doing with our life? And then the second thing is you have to have these boss battles, right? These battles with these, you know, the arch nemesis, the bad guy that's trying to take over the world. There's got to be good and there's got to be evil, and good has to defeat evil, right, in order for the game to be great. And so when it comes to greed, generosity last week, like we talked about, the boss battle is against greed, something that is innate in all of us that we have to fight against with generosity. When it comes to the ask and asking these questions so that we can become better people, we ask better questions so we can become better people, the boss battle that has to take place is with another A, apathy. Do you guys know what apathy is? Like, I'm sure we're all familiar. By definition, just so we're clear, we're all on the same page, apathy by definition is lack of interest, lack of enthusiasm, or lack of concern. And I feel like we just described a large portion of our population, right? Lack of interest, lack of enthusiasm, or lack of concern. Now, you're never gonna ask yourself better questions if you have a lack of interest, enthusiasm, or concern. You're certainly never gonna answer the questions if you have a lack of interest, enthusiasm, or concern. And you're sure the heck not gonna put in the work to make the changes necessary if you have a lack of enthusiasm, interest, or concern. So do you guys see the importance of this? So we will never grow. We will never see transformation happen in our lives. We know the old adage, like, you can't help somebody who doesn't want to change. And so transformation never happens in our life until we defeat or at the very least minimize apathy. You got a minute? Like, you have to have this level of compassion, interest, engagement, right, in order for us to see transformation take place in our lives. And I don't know many people who don't struggle with this on a very regular basis. Apathy is kind of like this concept of creep. You guys know it, like, creep. Like, it's not sudden. It's not a shock to the system. It's something that's very subtle and slow. I took a geology class when I was a freshman in college because I had no idea what I wanted to do with my life, right? So you take a geology class thinking, oh, this will be easy. No, absolutely. I still, to this day, I'm like, does that have mica schist in it? schist. I said it right, right. So it's like just as crazy. It was a hard class. But one of the things that we learned about was there's a concept, there's, I guess, kind of a phenomenon that happens in some parts of the world where the land creeps. So one section of the topography actually is sliding while the other is remaining the same. So you'll see somebody planted a, you know, they dug a hole and they stuck a post in the ground. And so the pole starts to because the land is creeping. And I think, does that make you guys? Yeah. So it's kind of cool. It's actually creepy that, like it's creepy that the land creeps like that. So what happens is it's subtle, it's slow. And I think apathy is like that. And so we have to minimize, at the very least minimize, hopefully kind of, remove it entirely if that's even possible, if we want to see growth and change in our life. So to ask and answer the question at hand, like what would a great blank do? We have to have a level of interest, enthusiasm, and concern. Romans chapter 12, verse 11 says it like this, and I love the way that this kind of, it's the complete opposite of apathy. It says this, never, 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 right? Be lacking in zeal, but keep your spiritual fervor serving the Lord. Never be lacking in zeal, but keep your spiritual fervor so that you can serve God fully, right? One version says it like this. It says, do not be slothful in zeal. And I just thought that was fun because I think sloths are so cool. All right, so anyway, do not be slothful in zeal. Be fervent in spirit, serve the Lord. And I love the way it says to never, right, to never lose your zeal. And again, that kind of speaks to me of the idea that we have to completely eradicate apathy if we want to get to a place where change happens in our lives. So that's kind of the individual goal that we're going to look at for today as it relates to asking. So we had the G, which was generosity. The A is to ask. But let's talk about it kind of on a corporate level, and we're going to call this the big ask. Y'all are bad, just bad. This is our corporate ask. What we're asking that everyone buy into this year as a group, as, you know, kind of our collective effort, is that we also kind of understand fully the importance of asking. So let me kind of give you some context here. So when we started the church 10 years ago, whatever it was, so we developed kind of the idea, just like you would do with anything that you want to see to come to pass. You would write it down, make it plain so that he who reads it may run with it, right? So the idea is anything that you have a vision to see accomplished, you write down. So we wrote a church down. We built a church on paper before we ever opened the doors to the church. And one of the things that we put as our values, something that mattered so much to us, was this concept. I guess it's a phrase called relational evangelism. Because, and maybe this is partially like, personal preference, and I don't like people that I don't know telling me what's wrong with me. I mean, I don't like anybody telling me what's wrong with me, but I especially don't like somebody who doesn't know the first thing about me to approach me and tell me what's wrong with my life. Now, if it's a friend, if it's somebody that I trust, if it's somebody that I have confidence in their character, that I've seen some things in them, and if they approach me, that's a completely different conversation. So we have kind of based our model on this approach of what we call relational evangelism. I don't think the church was ever intended to be built on billboards and Facebook advertisements and stuff like that. Now again, those things are fine. I'm sure they have their place. Although, I think there's a way to go about it. So can I just be honest for a moment? Are you guys cool with that? As a pastor, I'm going to make fun of some other pastors because I can do that, right? And if they want to make fun of me, I'm fair game. That's good. Dear God, why would we ever, put our face as the marketing campaign for the church? I suspect that if Paul was resurrected and he was he would come into 2022 and he's like, wait, you're doing what to reach people, to build the church? You're putting your face... and what happens is, unfortunately, as with anything, there's always the human element, right? There's always the human element, which contains the sin nature. And unfortunately, a lot of people have this idea of kind of the self, self-absorption to some degree, but self-promotion, and it's not, it becomes less about the church and less about Jesus, but that's another story. So I don't think there's a place for that kind of stuff. I think maybe very small place for that kind of stuff. But I believe that the greatest way for the church to grow is what would be referred to as organically, which means that what happens here happens in us. God is doing something in our lives, and then we then go share that with other people, and we invite them to join us on the journey that we are taking. Like, that's the way, you know, it's amazing that the church has survived for thousands of years without internet, technology, print. You know, the printing press didn't even come out until, what, the 1500s, Gutenberg, right? Didn't come out for 1,500 years after the church was developed, and it did just fine up until that point. And it's like, oh, well, we can't really grow unless we have technology. If you have a voice, if you have a story, if you have a life that has been changed, the church can grow and move forward. But the problem is we have relegated the responsibility of church growth to marketing and campaigns and Facebook, and dear God, help us with all of that stuff, right? I'll probably regret this, and I'll probably eat crow, and, you know, we'll do, because we embrace technology. We love technology. It is a pain in the butt. Like, it's, I love it, but man, it's such a mess, right? So the next thing is the whole Meta. Y'all seen much about the metaverse, right? Where now we're going to be kind of in this fully immersed version of another world, and like leave the world that we have where you physically actually are, and you're going to step into a world where you can be whatever you want to be. And I'm like, how about you step into the real world and make something of that and be something that you want to be and leave a legacy in the real world and stop worrying about all this augmented reality stuff. But that, and I'm like, and here's what happens, like, so like a digital church, for example, that's an oxymoron. Church is never intended to be digital. Church was intended to be a gathering of called out ones together with each other, where we can physically interact and touch and talk and do all of the things that we're intended to do as the church. Now, is it a great addition? Yes, it's great, because what happens now is people, they want to try before they buy. Right? So they'll watch some of the content that you put online and all of that stuff. So all of that stuff is great. All of that to say, all of that stuff is great. But that was never, is never, and will never be the way that the church is supposed to be built. So Dragon Warrior 3. I told you guys, it's my favorite game. 3 or 4, I don't know. It's like, it's a toss-up. So what happened is the first Dragon Warrior game that came out, it actually, you know, of course, all of the great games come from Japan. In fact, most great things come from Japan, like Toyota. So what had happened was the game was developed. The first game, it was called what's called an RPG. It's a role-playing game, and so you become a character, and you kind of go through the whole story, and you know, again, good versus evil, and you defeat the bad guy. And it's great because you can level up, and you have a boss battle. Everything that you need, all the ingredients for a great game. But then they did something I think it first came out in the third one that was so good. What they did is that now not only can you go through the game and you can level up and you can have the boss battles, but you actually get to invite other people into your party for a quest, or, you know, your quest part, right? This is the quest that you're on, the journey that you're on, and now you get to have a party. Not like a fiesta party, but a party, a group of people. Although, yeah, we can party too, right? So you get to invite people to come and be part of the quest that you're on. And I was like, isn't that what Christianity is? It's like, hey, I'm on this journey, and I'm seeing some leveling up. I'm seeing some growth in my life, and I want you to come and join me. Now, here's what I cannot guarantee. I cannot guarantee that your life will be perfect, but I can guarantee that your life will be different. You'll see significance. You'll see change. You'll see challenge. You'll see growth if you come on this journey. There's actually, I put a little screenshot. This is so embarrassing. See all four characters? And so here's what's so fascinating about each of the different characters. Each of the different characters have different abilities. They have different skills. They have different things that they bring to the table. And I'm like, what a beautiful picture. Whoever made the correlation between Dragon Warrior and the church? Who has two thumbs? Okay. Right? So I just think, what an incredible story of the church. But, okay, you got to get that off or I'm going to get distracted. But, thank you. But if we don't invite people on the journey, that never happens. Right? We never see the possibility. They don't experience the possibility for change if we don't invite them to experience the possibility for change. Now, here's where you get some pushback. One of the things that some people have kind of an idea and probably have their reasons. And again, I think so much of what we think is based on how we feel. We're very preferential in our view of the world. And so maybe your preference is kind of the more my four and no more. Like very small-minded. And that's fine to a degree until you start to consider. Because the other side of that is like there's extremes on everything. And I think the answer is usually a healthy balance in the middle, right? So the other side is that numbers are the only thing that matters. And the amount of people, the attendance are the only things that matter. And that's not true either, right? So maybe there's kind of this, again, a healthy balance. When you start to understand that every number represents a person, every person has a story, and every story matters to God. Every number, every time that we add one person to our number, right? Which, again, this is crazy, kind of that you even have to retool and redefine the way people think about this stuff. Every number has a story. Every number is a person. Every person has a story, and every story matters to God. So numbers do matter. It matters. There's significance. It's important for us as a church to not get so comfortable where we are that we become, what happens, the tendency is to become inclusive, right? Right? I'm sorry, exclusive, inwardly focused, and you become exclusive as a result of that. It kind of becomes, it's more about us and less about other people. And here's the thing, this is where apathy is still at play. We forget that people are struggling. We forget that people are hurting. We forget that people are lost because we've got it good. We've got our family, right? We've got our church family, and we're together. And anytime I'm struggling, I've got somebody that's going to go through it with me. And we'll have, you know, we'll go through our highs together and our lows together and all of that stuff. And we just forget that there are people who feel alienated and ostracized from Jesus. And it's our job to bring them into the family. That's how the church was intended to grow. It was never, again, nothing wrong with them. Maybe something wrong with them. I don't know. Some of the ways that we have marketed the church, we are the marketers for the church. And you ask, like, well, what is my advertisement approach? Your story, what God has done in your life, that is the way that we market. It's never anything, like, so clever and so grand, right? It's always just like, hey, this is what God has done in my life. I think he can do the same thing in your life. Why don't you come on this journey with me? It's really just that simple. What we're inviting people into is an imperfect family. In some cases, a really imperfect family, right? We never claim to have it all together. Like, we never claim to have all of the answers. We never claim that everything would be easy and smooth all the time, but we did claim that we would be there for each other, that we would fight for each other, that there would be strength in our numbers, right? And so that's what we're inviting people into. You guys understand the concept of family. It's like your family's crazy, but they're crazy like so in such a way that, like, hey, I can talk about my family, but you don't say, don't you say nothing about my mama, right? I know she's crazy, but you can't say nothing about it. I know that my brother's crazy, my sister's crazy, whatever. Like, y'all know how the family works. It's imperfect, but we're together. We fight for each other, and that's what I believe that the church is. With all of our different gifts, our unique abilities, we're inviting people to be part of something where they can come, they can belong, and then they can express their God-given unique strengths and abilities. I could give you all of the statistics because, man, I've spent a lot of time kind of building a case, more or less, for, hey, because I feel like you almost have to defend church anymore because everybody prioritizes everything over church. And I'm just being, can we be honest? I mean, I'm going to. Again, I just really don't care what people think. So everything has become, like, I'm like, for real, you think that... I can't even think of the most ridiculous examples. I've heard so many terrible reasons why people don't come to church consistently. And so, for example, I'll just give you an example from mine and Shelley's own life. So we've been part of this church since the beginning, believe it or not. So a little over 10 years, and we have missed 3 Sundays in 10 years. No, that's crazy. It's absolutely crazy. Now, here's what's not fair. I'll qualify that. Like, so we've kind of built our entire lives around the church. Our schedules are such, a lot of people, they work Monday through Friday, and then, you know, the weekend is their time if they're going to get away. Like, man, we're all about getaways. We fully endorse and support that. We've just built ours so that we leave Sunday after church and we come back Tuesday or Wednesday, right? So here's, that's one of the things that we've done to prioritize church, because you cannot sell somebody what you're not smoking, as a very poor analogy, as one of the street analogies, right? You cannot sell something to somebody that you're not fully bought into yourself. And so can you imagine, let's just say, throw out a hypothetical scenario. It's like, yeah, man, my church is so awesome, and God is doing this great thing in my life. You should come check it out. And you come once every 4 weeks, and they come, and you're not here, and they're like, what's up, bro? Right? We have to be bought in if we're going to actually be proficient in asking other people, because they're going to call us on our nonsense. So that was one of the things that we decided early on, is that church is going to be such an incredibly high priority for us and our family, and it's caused some problems. Because my children are all, they're way more athletic than I am, which is moderately impressive, right? So they're great athletes. And so one of the things that has happened over the last 10 years is, like, now every weekend you have the opportunity to go be part of some extracurricular where it's, you know, Saturday and Sunday, you've got tournaments. And it's literally, I mean, it is year round now that these tournaments take place. And so there are people, well, you know, I'll get back to church when the season ends. The season never ends, right? Because it rolls from one season to the next season, and church becomes such a low priority. And the first thing that I want to remind people of is your child is not going to be a professional athlete. Like, they're average, and you're paying a lot of money for them to be on this team so that you can then teach them all of the wrong priorities about life, right? And that's all of that stuff in moderation is fine. Like, there are times where, you know, it's just, you kind of got to do what you got to do. But here's my philosophy. This is how much I value church and what it is that we do here. I'm like, why don't we skip school on Monday and go do it? They go to school 5 days a week. Why can't they miss one day of school instead of missing the one day a week that they go to church? So now it's been 14 days since they've gone to church if you don't have another tournament the following week. So then it turns into 21 days since why don't we just cut out on Friday and go play a tournament then? That's just how I feel. I mean, I'm going to upset a lot of the people who are, like, heavily academic, right? You know, you can be academic on, anyway, I'm going to stop. Stop. So church has to be a priority for us if we're ever going to build the church like we were called to build the church, by asking other people to come. And it really, it's interesting because it kind of comes back to another A, and the A is to attend. Like, if you don't build attendance to church into your life as part of your routine, I don't know that you ever fully experience the benefits of being connected to the community, because you're not fully connected to the community if you only come to the community once every 4 weeks. Yeah, I know that national averages, the statistics say that people think that they are regular churchgoers when they go once every 6 weeks. These are national, and that was a couple of years ago. It went from once every 4 weeks to once every 6 weeks. Now they probably pop in on the metaverse and it's good. So you couldn't sell me on that. You couldn't convince me that being connected means that, hey, once every 6 weeks, I'm going to pop in, we're going to catch up, and I'm going to check out, right? It is so much more than that. It's so much more significant than that. The connection has to be deeper than that, or we never fully tap into or experience the benefits of it. And there are benefits. Again, like I said, I've built this whole case on the importance of church because I feel like it's partially my responsibility to defend the church, because everybody constantly wants to attack the church. Like, the idea, I'm on a tangent. I'm just going to keep going for a minute, right? So one of the things that happens in our society is like, oh, well, I love Jesus, but I hate the church. Well, I like you, but your wife's ugly. How's that working, right? How's our relationship now? Are we good? Because the church is Jesus' bride, right? Now, is the church perfect? Absolutely not. There's, again, the human sinful element. So it's not always going to be perfect, but we love the church because Jesus established the church. It has value, it has meaning, it has purpose, and it should be, has to be important to us. Your wife's not ugly. It was a joke. So we're inviting people into an imperfect family, one that certainly has its shortcomings and it has its flaws, but they're there with us. We're there with them through all of life's highs and lows. Oh, back to the benefits really quickly. Just, you can Google the values or benefits of being in a community of faith. People are obviously the spiritual element, spiritual, you know, connectedness and development and maturity, but there are even physical, mental, and emotional benefits from being part of a community of faith, and there are studies that kind of bear that all out. It's important. Acts chapter 2, verses 46 through 47, just in case you're still of the belief that growth is not the goal. Every day, this is what it says, every day they continue to meet together in the temple courts. Now, just quickly, every day they continue to meet together in the temple court. We're just trying to get people to come to church one day a week for an hour. Like, we can all carve that out, right? We can all make that. We got 168 of them. Let's devote one to the community. So every day they continue to meet together in the temple courts. They broke bread, bless God. I like food. In their homes, and they ate together with glad and sincere hearts, praising God and enjoying the favor of all their people. The end of verse 47, it says this, and the Lord added to their number daily those who were being saved, those who were being brought into the family, those whose lives were being changed because they were invited onto this journey. Do you think that the Acts Church had a sophisticated marketing campaign? Do you think, obviously, they don't have the internet, they don't have Meta, they don't have Facebook, Instagram, Snapchat, TikTok, they didn't have any of that stuff. Do you know how they changed the world? They changed the world through this crazy concept. It's the word of mouth, right? Where this is what God has done in my life. I think he can do the same thing in your life. Why don't you join me on this journey? And that is how the church was built, established, and intended to grow. And so we have to. It is our responsibility. Every person who is part of the church, it is our responsibility to build the church. It's important. It matters. But it never happens unless we are fully vested. We have to be bought in. We have to understand not just in theory or intellectually the importance of church, but we have to be heart and soul committed to the church. And if it's not this church, that's fine. Go somewhere else. I'm not being condescending at all. Like, if this is not the church where you feel like you can be connected and the church matters to you and it's significant for you, go find one that is. But don't just hop around so that you don't ever have any commitment or accountability. Like, you go for a few months until people start to realize that you're not doing anything and you're not investing in the church, and then you leave because they asked you to serve. This is a real conversation. Somebody said that they left the church because the church was asking them to serve. And I'm like, it's a good thing Jesus didn't have your attitude. Like, the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve and to give his life as a ransom for all. So salvation is made available to you by the serving servants, the serving Savior, and you are too good to serve in the church. Get out of here with that. Get gone, right? Get gone. Bye, right? But if you're here, if this is your church, if this is your family, like, be in, be all in, be bought in, be bought in to the degree that you are willing to put your name, your reputation, your character on the line and invite other people to be part of this journey. We try not to do anything like too crazy. Like Shelly said, I got saved in a very charismatic church. Shelly's grown up in like crazy churches. Like, I don't know, snakes may or may not have been involved. I'm not sure. But the charismatic churches that are the church that I got saved in, like, it would, like, you would sing the same song for about 3 hours. And it wasn't any better the second hour or the third hour than it was the first hour. And then what would happen is sometimes, like, it was just like the energy, Shelly said, ramping up. That's a very appropriate expression of what was taking place. It was like the energy was building, right? And then it would ramp up to a point, to a degree, where some people could not contain it. So the only appropriate response to the ramping up of energy is to start running around the room. It was like a fast-paced Jericho march, right? And they're just running around the room because they're so, we're not going to do all that. I mean, unless y'all want to. I'd be cool with it. We could give it a shot. But we're not going to, our goal is to make this barrier that a lot of people have to church as low as possible. We want people to come. We want people to learn about Jesus. It's kind of this idea. I'll finish with this. I'm sorry. I just keep going. What happens a lot of times is that we kind of want people to immediately feel, understand, comprehend, and process the love of Jesus. And that's not really something that we're fully capable of doing. He's the only one that can do that. We cannot make people fall in love with Jesus, but we can set up some dates. And so when we are inviting them, what we're essentially doing is it's a blind date, right? We're bringing them into a situation where they can be exposed to the gospel. They can be exposed to the message of the love that God has for them in spite of where they've been, in spite of what they've done. All of those things that we tend to think are barriers to us having a relationship with God. They come in, we set up dates, they fall in love with Jesus. That's what we do. That is our responsibility as a church. So let's ask better questions. Y'all know what happens a lot of times is we're so afraid to ask people real questions and we just try to keep everything surface. I've noticed this about myself, like, and I feel like I've gotten a little bit better over the last couple of years because it used to be like, hey, how you mama now? How's your job? All this like surface level stuff. And we never ask better questions. We never ask, how are you doing, right? Those pointed questions, not trying to be psychoanalytical or anything like that, but just expressing our true concern for people, not apathetic. That is how we build the church. Amen. Let me pray for us. God, you are so good. You're so good. We're so thankful for God, for your love for us. God, it's a love that in many ways is unexplainable. We don't deserve it. We don't earn it. We don't work for it. God, it's not based on merit, effort. None of the things that we tend to emphasize. But you love us because you are love. God, we're so thankful for that. God, we're so thankful for what you've done in our lives up to this point. God, that maybe we're not who we want to be, but we're certainly not who we used to be. And you've began a good work in us, and you will be faithful to complete that work. God, I pray that you would help us to always have eyes to see those around us, the needs in their life, to not be apathetic, to not be so consumed with what's going on in our own lives that we aren't aware of what's going on in the lives of other people. And that we would invite them on this journey to be yours, to belong to you, to be part of what you're doing on the earth. Jesus, we love you. We need you. And it's in your incredible name we pray, and everybody said, amen.